Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to the Fundamental Principle. I'm your host, Jerome. With me today is our esteemed guest, Mr. Jose Nino. Jose, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on, man.
You're very welcome. I give you a short biography, but I don't think I'm capable of reciting all the different places you write for. For those of you who don't know, Jose writes for his own Substack at El Nino Speaks. He has his own podcast. He has published in, I believe, the Occidental Observer. I want to say for the Mises Institute, for the anti-war.com. Like, where have you written for lately? Because I can't keep up.
Yeah. So I used to write for the Mises Institute, but it's almost been like 2 years since I've written for them. And honestly, I kind of stopped writing for them consistently in 2022, but that's where I got my first big break in writing about foreign policy and other issues. But these days, as you correctly mentioned, I am writing mostly for Occidental Observer and then Libertarian Institute on foreign policy issues. And I have a Substack as well, Jose Nino Unfiltered, and the podcast as well, El Nino Speaks. That those are like the main spots where I do a lot of writing. I do host the Barnes Review, where I contribute as well, and they're bi-monthly publications, and American Free Press. But my regular work is actually with Headline USA, where I'm the deputy editor there, and I do publish some articles there that are like on a range of issues from big tech surveillance, immigration restriction, foreign policy, and other issues.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, the monthly Thought Crime Syndicate that Jose and I are both members of, with our mutual friend Pete Quinones. So, Jose is writing here, there, and everywhere. I strongly urge everyone to check it out. I have subscribed to a Substack for, I guess, probably a year and a half, 2 years. It's really good. And Jose was kind enough to come on today to discuss Latin American Catholicism. And for those of you that don't know, Jose was born in Venezuela and moved to the United States as a child, I believe. And then you live or have lived all over the Latin American diaspora in the United States, in Texas and elsewhere, right? Is that?
Yeah, I grew up in Texas, and I've lived all over the states after graduating from UT Austin. Lived like in DC, Colorado. Now I'm in the Charlotte area. And I've also lived in Austin as well, because I grew up in the Dallas area. And I've lived abroad too, lived in Colombia for some time and also Chile. So I am pretty well acquainted with Western hemispheric affairs and living amongst different cultures.
Right. And I mean, when for too many Americans, I think, right, when they think, oh, all the Mexicans are devout Catholics, they'll come to our churches and they'll produce vocations and they'll, you know, they'll fill the church, right? That's effectively what the bishops, the USCCB has made a deal with the government. Like, give us money and we'll facilitate, you know, mass immigration. And that will fill our churches with all the kids that the Irish and the Germans and the Poles didn't have from like the 70s onward because of white flight. We'll fill the churches with El Salvadorans and Mexicans and other stuff. And I don't think many, you know, Anglo or European Americans understand that like the church is very different in Latin America. And it's not all one thing. You know, the church in Chile is very different than the church in, say, Bolivia. But could you just kind of go over that? Because I you're going to have to deal with this, right? Like, unless you're going to, like, a Latin mass that's 90% white, you're going to have to deal with the fact that, like, a big chunk of your church is going to be foreigners. And it's going to vary from place to place. Like, there'll be,
you know. Yeah. So, in Latin America, the game is changing a lot. A lot of people, in my opinion, when they talk about it, they're still stuck in the 20th century. So, what's happened now in Latin America is that Catholicism is actually collapsing in a lot of places, where, and not just in terms of people are just like turning atheists or whatever, evangelical Protestantism, especially Pentecostalism, is growing like crazy, especially in Latin America. Guatemala is the primary case. And that's a holdover of the Cold War era, when the U.S. was trying to combat liberation theology, and it did so in several ways, whether they propped up evangelical sects or they propped up some more U.S.-friendly Catholic figures. But now, I think there's a more insidious element where it's the Hebraic hidden hand that's propping up these new pro-Zionist strains of Protestantism in Latin America that are actually gaining a lot of traction. And this trend is also happening in a lot of the global South, from Nigeria all the way to Kenya as well. And I've long argued this has very much a Jewish element to it. And yeah, Catholicism in Latin America, back to that, historically, it does take a very syncretic route where, depending on the country, if it's very indigenous or African, it starts to blend in more of those racial groups, cultures, whether it's like indigenous type of cultures or African animism. And the Catholicism there can get just turned really kooky. But nowadays, it's becoming the big challenge now is that the church, because of this, and also the global homification of it, has actually opened up a vacuum for these kook evangelical sects to come in and make headway. And that's one reason why, even in the U.S. too, if you look at Hispanics, and I've written about this on Substack about Hispanic cultural trends, Hispanics too in the U.S. are actually gradually becoming more Protestant, or just not very religious in general, especially after the second and third generation. They just turn into this amorphous mystery meat consumer population that just continues to sully the country's demographic.
But they'll buy Guadalupe candles and, you know.
Yeah. It's like a consumer identity. Yes. That's actually a really good point. They'll buy like the weird aspects of their Catholic identity, or they sometimes will just convert. I increasingly see every time I go to Miami or other places that a lot of Hispanics are gravitating more towards these evangelical megachurches in general. And it's actually kind of funny because leftists would always associate Zionism with white evangelicals, whereas I've noticed that white evangelicals are becoming increasingly more anti-Zionist, whereas brown, black evangelicals are becoming more pro-Zionist, where now Zionism is becoming more brown-coded, hilariously. And that's one of the biggest trends that's happening in real time now. And it's part of another Jewish gay-op in general. But yes, the assumption that people have that Catholic migrants coming to the U.S. is going to make it more based or more conservative is off base on so many levels. On one hand, they're probably going to bring in, best case scenario, their weird syncretic Catholicism. On the other hand, they may end up just converting to some weird, Jewish sponsor.
Well, yeah. I think a huge part of a problem that most Anglos Anglo-Catholics, or white Catholics, for lack of a better term, but not understanding racial issues is the biggest, is the biggest problem that otherwise good-hearted people who just genuinely want to, like, bring the true faith to people, right? you know, like Indios, right, which is, and Mestizos, which are mostly, I mean, they're between, how you look at it, they're like usually 50 to 70% Indio, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a besetting vice of alcoholism and like sexual abuse of close relatives. And you see that from like all the way up to like Eskimos in Canada, all the way down to like Tierra del Fuego in Argentina, right? Like indigenous
yes.
people have problems with drink and with like drunk driving and like sexual continence when they're drunk. That's just a besetting vice that those people have. And, you know, like in America, mestizos will come to America, be Catholic, get raised Catholic in like an indifferent Novus Ordo church. They'll get married, have a couple kids. He'll cheat on her or she'll cheat on him. And there'll be drinking and drugs involved or whatever. And they'll split up and then they'll become evangelical Protestants. That's what happened with Ted Cruz's family. Ted Cruz's family was, you know, was Catholic. His dad developed a drinking problem, you know, got ran around on Ted Cruz's mom, got saved, became a low church Zionist Protestant. And then Ted Cruz was raised low church Zionist Protestant. And you know, the corrosive acid of America, of liberalism, you know, and is not a good place for people who, you know, average IQ in the like low 90s. Right. And, they're not like the there've been great saints of the church, you know, Rose of Lima, San Juan Diego, whatever, that have come from South America, but there have been very few like major intellects that have come from the church in that part of the world. And I think that it's just like a cultural thing. Like mestizos just generally don't read. That's like that's a Blanco thing, right? Like to be studious, right? Like they're like, well, we work, we don't waste time studying. We go to work. And that's good in some respects, right? But in others, like you're not gonna convince a dude who's never read a book after high school, like that he needs to read Thomas Aquinas and become Catholic again after like straying into evangelicalism. It's just not gonna happen. Like that guy's not coming on board. You know, and the traditionalist movement in South America, to the extent it exists, Bishop Gallardo of the Society of St. Pius X and Bishop de Castro Maier of Brazil, of Campos in Brazil, they're both like 100% white. You know, like this is not a society, like, you know, they're Canelo Alvarez, the boxer, is a Mexican, but he's white. And there are white Argentinians and white Bolivians and white Peruvians and white Brazilians. You know, there are white Venezuelans, or there were white Venezuelans. Everyone I know of who's Venezuelan and white ended up in the United States, but including you, right? Like,
yeah.
That's the, right. But all these people, like the people capable of like having a theological discussion and argument and being persuaded by reason, they're not the, you know, the mestizos coming across the border illegally. They're the, you know, petroleum engineers who were working in Venezuela who were like, I don't want to live here anymore. Food costs too much. I'm going to go, you know, move to Houston and become and work for Exxon, you know.
Yes. The thing is that the Catholicism you see in Latin America too, it looks more like a spectacle in general because of the African and indigenous influences. And you don't see much pensative type of activity, deep reading or deep learning, because that's just not really in the culture. And it's downstream from the genetics and the racial facets. That's something you have to keep in mind, because Catholicism you see like in Ireland.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Poland or whatever, is this not going to be seen in a lot of Latin America? You may see it like, say, like southern Brazil, which is wider, Uruguay or Argentina, and some parts of Chile, but you're just not going to see that like in Guatemala of all places. And that's just how the game goes. And I stress to Catholics in the United States that because of this reality, it's in your interest to maintain your racial integrity and push for measures that keeps the United States as white as possible. Because here's the thing. You may get some new recruits of the church, some new non-whites, but it's no guarantee they're going to be devout Catholics, or their progeny are going to be devout Catholics within like a generation or two. And in the meantime, you're destroying the national character of your polity. So it's just like a lose-lose. It's myopic, but I just think that too. We've talked about this off the record, especially regards to guys like Adrian Vermeule or whatever, is that they think that they can stitch this all together. But history has shown so many cases of multi-ethnic, multiracial polities, no matter how religiously cohesive they may be or how enlightened of a ruler they may have, they end up invariably breaking down in the long term. It's a law of basic politics. It should be treated like the law of gravity.
Well, yeah, and I think that there's a major problem, especially among faithful people who take religion seriously. They have this idea that only religion is important, and it's like, no, you got to do both. That's the whole point of this program, is that people with the correct religious take off in their politics are completely bass-ackwards. And as much as I love a lot of our more nationalist bros out there, if you don't have like a spiritual self-defense system set up where you understand that like you need one, you're going to lose, because you're going to undermine yourself spiritually. They're, you know, a coherent worldview has a coherent politics and a coherent religion. And I just think that, you know, for the people who are like, the future of the church is Latin American. Like, well, the future of the church is evangelical, like Iglesia de la Luz, you know, strip mall church, right? Where, you know, it's just going to be low church, like Bible only, and frankly, kind of silly. Because the people that you've, you know, Catholicism in Latin America is like a mile wide and an inch deep. Like, it underneath is this like indigenous or black substrate that, you know, comes to the fore very quickly. And the second you strip off the thin coating of Iberian Catholicism, everything else comes to the front, you know, and lots of syncretism, lots of like saint beating, you know, I mean, like no one else but the indigenous Mexica, right? The Aztec demon worshippers could have come up with something like Santa Muerte, right? Like
yeah.
Of criminals and death. Like what the, like, no, this is like, this is just a demon, man. Like this is not some like, oh, look at this wonderful practice of faithful Catholics. Like, no, these are bad people who do bad things, and they're genetically predisposed to like awful crimes. I don't know what else to tell people. Like, I mean, I remember reading that article you wrote about how like it's like one and a half generations, and then the recent immigrants are like majority Protestant, isn't it? I mean, I forget exactly the exact, but I remember reading the article that you wrote on your Substack, but I don't remember the exact details. But it was like within two generations, they're not Catholic anymore. Is that
correct? Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. This is an article. Yeah, I can pull it up actually right now.
Would you please? Because it was really, really outstanding. In fact, I should have had.
Yeah, five myths about Hispanic voters. Yes, this is an article that I was telling that I put forward right before the 2024 presidential election, and yeah, it's my myth, and it was about five myths about Hispanic voters, and the myth number four: Hispanics are staunch religious conservatives. That, and this is actually kind of dispelling myths on both sides of the aisle, where actually for Republicans, the strongest predictor of a Hispanic voting Republican is actually if they're Protestant, not so much Hispanic. And, but overall, Hispanic religiosity has been declining in the last few decades. Like, for example, in 2022, just to underscore this point, 43% of Hispanic adults in the United States identified as Catholic. And this was a steep decline from 2010 when 67% identified as Catholic.
So from 2010, it was two-thirds. And by 2022, it was 45%.
Yeah. Yeah, 43, 45%, give or take. And
so in less than 15 years, you'd seen a 20% drop.
Yes.
Or more than 20% drop. And that if present trends continued by mid-century, it would be like 15% Catholic.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's probably going to be if there's still like a religious subsect, it's probably going to be Protestant, like some of these like weird evangelical types. But one curious stat, though, that I found here was that the percentage of Hispanics that identified as religiously unaffiliated, that could span atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular, increased to 30%, which was quite remarkable when you compare it to 2010, when it was only 10%. And this secularization of Hispanics is actually driven more by the younger Hispanic cohort, because I think 49% of Hispanics in the age range of 18 to 29 classify themselves as religiously unaffiliated. And by contrast, 20% of Hispanics ages 15 and up are religiously unaffiliated. So overall, Hispanics in the U.S. are either secularizing, getting out of the Catholic Church, and if they are religious, they're gravitating towards more of these evangelical churches.
Right, which is to say that for those of you who care about this sort of thing, right, like in not, because Bolsonaro in Brazil, there's problems with him politically, and of course, but he's an example of like a guy who got divorced and became a Protestant, right? He was raised Catholic, got married, got divorced. Now he's an evangelical. He's like, yeah, I'd like to be still a Catholic or when I was raised Catholic, but, they won't let me get divorced, so I'm a Protestant now. Like, does anyone really think in a society like where liberalism reigns supreme, and personal choice is like the number one arbiter of what is good, that like Catholicism with all of its rules and celibacy and all that other stuff is gonna win out, particularly amongst like low impulse control, low IQ people? Like, it's just not gonna happen, man. And I think way too many people who are right on religious matters, they just don't understand how this works. Like, Juan has a 90 IQ and a crippling addiction to Modelo Especial. Juan is going to, get done roofing. His back is going to hurt. He's going to have an entire six-pack of Modelos. And then he's going to make a pass at, like, some 14-year-old girl. And she'll reject him and he'll get in trouble, or she'll say yes. And whatever, like this is not the high church, Bishop de Castromeyer was entirely German, I think. Right? Like, this is not something that's going to, like, just fix itself by, like, adding more people who want stuff from the church, don't produce vocations, don't give money, and frequently leave. And I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I think that, like, a bare minimum of honesty about these sorts of issues is necessary just to, like, to function properly. I mean, am I wrong?
I mean, adding more biomass is simply not the answer. Non-white biomass specifically, in this case, is not the answer to these problems. And, well, that's the thing, too. This shows the insidious nature of some of these Catholic and other religious revival movements in the U.S., which I suspect think there's a hidden hand behind them that's pushing this stuff, because it's a way to kind of de-radicalize and de-racialize the population and prepare the population for a non-white future. And that's, like, unacceptable. Like, we shouldn't be relying on subversive religious copes for to confront these problems that we're facing. Yes, the church is an institution that should be protected, but as you said correctly, that what makes this movement special, the unique selling point, is that we're both, that the what you guys are promoting is both racial and religious, and that has to stand, because without protecting your racial stock, you're going to end up losing your religion eventually. Like, look at the trends as I'm showing here, and especially the global South, is that they're just basically going to have a future where nones are just gonna be worshiping this weird Afro-syncretic or, like, indigenous-syncretic Judaized form of Christianity. That's not a future we're fighting for. Or in some cases, like in the U.S., you're gonna have this weird regime-approved non-white Catholicism, and that's not acceptable.
Right. Well, it's not only does that kind of weird syncretic non-European Catholicism not really hold on to people, because, you know, I'm older than you are by a few years, but not that much. And, you know, we've talked privately. I mean, for the listeners, like, Jose's a friend of mine. Like, he could call me anytime, you know, he's one of the few people. And, you know, and we talk about other stuff, and, like, I'm in my mid 40s, I'm 45 this year. You know, probably 2/3 of the people I went through CCD or, you know, religious education with as a kid, like, not married in the church, don't have, you know, if they got married, it was late. They have one kid. They did. It's certainly not like the, you know, got married in the church at 22, had seven kids, all seven kids are still in the church. And, you know, like, one of their sons is a priest, or one of their daughters is a religious sister or something, you know, like that. That's not what's happening. And when you add all these foreigners that are, you know, like every white guy I know that takes their faith seriously has at some point, like, read serious books about the faith. And they've had, like, they've thought about, like, okay, what does this mean? Like, the pro-life movement is full of these sorts of people, right? Like, they actually sit down, it's nice white people who think about this stuff, and they realize how horrible abortion is, and then they do something about it, right? Might be ineffectual, might be kind of pointless, but whatever. They do what they can. And this mestizo, syncretic, Afro-Catholicism, like, they don't read, man. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, they're not interested in, like, really knowing the faith. And they're not capable of, like, this is, again, like, this is not a criticism, it's just a statement of fact, right? When your average IQ is 90 as a group, Like, you're not going to, like, suss out the subtleties of, like, a Kevin MacDonald book and, be like, realize why Jews have to be.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Opposed on, like, secular grounds, right? You're going to be like, but they're in the Old Testament, man. Like, well, no, they're not. That's the church. But they're not, like, they're not capable of having this argument. And as the church gets browner, right, more and more people are going to be dependent on it. There are going to be less and less people putting money in, putting vocations in, giving the, you know, like, and they're going to leave. I don't know what else to say. Like, that. I mean, could you talk about the syncretism a little bit? Because I don't think most white people understand just, like, what that syncretism means. Right, because you're talking about people from the jungle who, like, sacrifice babies to demons. And then they become Catholic, and then they, like, take a little bit of that demon worship and, you know, throw it in with their Catholicism, and they're like, no, that's just demon worship.
Yeah, it varies because, like, Mexico is the most salient example when you have, like, Dia de los Muertos, which is right after Halloween, which is November 1st, more or less. And this involves the amalgamation of, like, Catholic aesthetics and just pre-Hispanic traditions that are, like, deal with, like, reincarnation and the veneration of death, hence the name Santa Muerte. And it's like, that's probably the most salient example you'll see, especially if you live in the American Southwest, like, in early November. You'll see all these weird images of like the Virgin, the Virgen de Guadalupe, and all over the place with some indigenous symbolism. In Caribbean cultures, that's where you start to see more African influences, and that stuff just looks like voodoo. I mean that's what it basically is. And you see their Catholic ritual, like the religious rituals they do there. They have, like, this wild dancing revelry that's no different from watching, like, Africans in, like, a TikTok video dancing, like, in their, like, mud hut villages and all of that. It's just transported to the Western Hemisphere. It's just the same type of racial energy. And you see a lot of stuff with, like, witchcraft, sorcery, magical communications with, like, spirits, all that stuff, both, like, in the indigenous and African context. And there's a lot more, like, festivals too. There's not as much, like, solemn reflection of the texts that's concerning, like, the Catholic faith, but it's more revelry than anything else. That's one of, like, those basic ways of explaining it. So you have, like, carnival and all of that, carnaval, like, in Brazil, and even a lot of Latin American, a lot of Spanish speaking countries have similar types of celebrations like that. In Latin America, even in the present, Catholicism, like I've said before, it is, like, losing influence, and people have just become more secularized, and they kind of treat it more as a casual type of cultural identity, more so than, like, a devout religious practice. Because in most of these countries now, people have very secular habits. They've actually become Judeo-Americanized in many respects, in terms of of just being kind of like mindless consumers and all of that. And I just think that the idea that you're going to get like a crusader state, some like Catholic crusader state, by having a bunch of immigration from Latin America is just wishful thinking at best.
Well, not only are there like the people here who, you know, the first duty of any responsible prelate or politician in the United States is the care of the people here already, right? And so letting a bunch of foreign invaders in is obviously gross dereliction of duty and a terrible crime. But if, like, the Judeo-Americanized liberal state, like, causes people to, like, apostatize in, like, two generations, why would anyone who actually care about these people, like, bring them here? Why wouldn't you strengthen, you know, what percentage of El Salvador is living in the United States? Like 25%?
Yeah.
I mean, why? Why would you want all of your young people to like leave for the El Norte, right? And come to the United States and become secular and become, you know, and damn themselves, right? Why would all these pious, you know, La Hispanidad grandmas want their children and grandchildren to be like born outside the faith, outside of their homes, and go to these places where they're like gonna turn into liberals who do drugs and leave the church? Like, if you really cared about those people that you were formerly the bishop of, you know, Your Holiness Pope Leo, like, you would want Peru to suck less. And you would be honest about the fact that Peru's just kind of going to suck because, like, the average IQ in Peru is, like, 93. And you would tell people to, like, accept that and deal with that reality. Rather than, like, everyone has to come to El Norte. Like, well, okay, then America's going to suck. Or the United States is going to suck. Like, all you need to do is go to places that are now majority Hispanic. And I was, you know, just in one not too long ago. And, like, there's trash everywhere and graffiti. And I don't know why. That's just a cultural thing. Well, why should, you know, like, the Hispanic neighborhood in Seattle is not, like, a great advertisement for La Hispanidad? Right. You know.
Yeah, I mean, that's
like a paradise, right? Like, this is not.
Yeah. No, it's not. And I mean, that's the problem with these faulty assumptions that conservative commentators have held for decades about Hispanics and other non-white groups, is that these groups, like, they may ostensibly present themselves as, like, traditionalists or whatever, but they have tons of other baggage that most people aren't really willing to come to grips with. And a lot of that takes, like, reading about those cultures, like, in depth, or actually living in those countries to really understand that you're dealing with racially alien and culturally alien populations, and you can't just import these people and treat them like consumer units that'll be like assimilated into your civilization. And honestly, even if they were like assimilated, again, no more biomass. That's just like, should be like the focus. We already have like too much as it is, and that's putting a lot of strain on infrastructure and the environment. And we need to like actually go back to first principles and sort this country out. And one of the more straightforward ways is by stopping the nonstop deluge of mass migration.
Right. Well, of course, that's a political question that you and I both agree on. But you said I know you've lived in like Texas, Colombia, and Chile. Could you just briefly outline like what the church was like in each of those three places, just to give people an idea?
Yeah, in Texas, my Catholic upbringing, I was in a church that was was still predominantly, at least plurality, white. But then you had a large, obviously large Hispanic cohort. And there was also a sizable Vietnamese congregation as well. They had like their own little mass within that church in North Dallas, because there is a sizable Viet diaspora there. And the white Catholic mass was just normal. Like, I enjoy that. When I attended the Catholic mass there, in Spanish, it was semi-normal, but you could kind of tell it was still very much racially alien, not just like linguistic terms, but just like the energy of it. And I also felt that the when I would do like the social events or anything outside of the mass, the more white classes, like the Sunday school services or any of the other seminars that would be held in the church, they're just much more intellectually provocative. Whereas anything that was like done in Spanish, whenever I would go to some of the Sunday school stuff there, it was very much dumbed down for sure. Colombia, I never really got a full grasp for it, but because that's like the least amount of time I've lived in a Catholic country. But there, it has a lot of syncretism too, because there is a sizable Afro-Caribbean demographic cohort there, and that is definitely impacted the festivals and the church going. Though what I notice in Colombia is that even though it's pretty Catholic, it's definitely has its fair share of Western style degeneracy. Like, there's very much rampant prostitution and all this. Plus, it's very Americanized. It's historically been one of like the U.S.'s most reliable trading partners and security partners in the Latin America. And as a result of this, when you get in bed with Uncle Sambostein, you're gonna catch its civilizational STDs in one shape or form. The society there is still like male dominated for the most part, but that's changing as well, because there's just more women in the workforce now. And that's also impacted it religiously too, because when you have all these kind of countervailing forces, they lead to like a decline in the church's influence. Chile is thoroughly secular, unfortunately. It's developed economically speaking and very safe by Latin American standards, but it's trending in the direction of many European states. For example, it's embracing mass migration. Corporate feminism has really taken off there, especially after I have left. I still talk to people there, and they tell me a lot of stuff where everything, it just seems like that it's like 5 to 15 years behind like the U.S. and other Western nations in terms of like degenerate trends. It's still largely a mestizo society. However, its demographics are changing because it's gotten more Haitian migration, Colombian migration, and Venezuelan migration. You do see pockets of religious devotion among certain groups, like Lebanese Christians and some Palestinian Christians, like they're like descendants there, because there's a significant Arab Christian minority there that came when the Ottoman Empire collapsed. And then you have other groups like people of like German or Italian descent in Chile that certain segments of those populations are still pretty religious, but it's secularized a lot. Southern cone states, generally speaking, whether you're talking about Uruguay, Argentina, or Chile, you'll see like very hardcore religious community, like religious minorities, but the broader society though is going more in a more secular direction. It's not as syncretic though, and that's because there's not as much, for example, there's pretty much non-existent African communities there, with the exception of like Uruguay, which does have like a sizable black minority, but those other countries, they don't have as many blacks. They do have a good deal of indigenous or at least mestizo populations, but yeah, I generally...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Found in my time, like living in these multiple countries, is a trend towards secularization in some shape or form.
Well, I think that, again, most Americans just don't understand this. Like, there are white populations in all of these places. It's very much like the United States. And, in that there is this mix of Africans, indigenous people, much more mixed, mestizo, like partially white mestizo populations, that's the majority in a lot of these places. But again, you know, the people, all the white people in those countries stay in those countries, or almost all of them, except for like Venezuela and Cuba, right?
Yeah,
where the white population basically ended up in the United States, but that's because of like hostile anti-white socialism. If you're white in Mexico, life's pretty good, and you know Vicente Fox is like 6'5" and German, the former president of Mexico, right? Like he's this tall German dude, and. Traditionally there was, I don't know if it's still the case, but there was very much like colorism, right? Where the Criollos and were on top, and then the Castizos were under them, and then underneath them was the Mestizos, and then everybody else, right? And that, like, socially, that still pretty much obtains in Latin America from the little bit of time I've spent in Mexico and elsewhere. That's still pretty much the case. Am I wrong?
Yeah, that's still the case because there's really never been a civil rights revolution in those countries. And that's actually why white people in some of those countries, they generally speaking, no matter how politically or economically unstable they can get, they could still thrive and don't have to worry about anti-white lynch mobs or random criminals coming in because they have access to private security. And there's actually the like anti-discrimination laws in those countries are not as strong. So there's ways to still live in like white pockets. Like, I mean, you can go to even like Chile, despite how progressive it's become. There's still very significant pockets of the population that are pretty white and they maintain their identities. Like they have these type of clubs called like estadios, like stadiums that are like Estadio Italiano, Estadio Croata, like Croatian stadium or Italian stadium that preserves like an ethnic identity for people that are part of those respective European diasporas there. And it's, they still kind of like promote that type of identity because there's not as much of like a concerted effort by the state, by those respective like Latin American states to actually like destroy those type of European identities. But that's just mostly a largely like a historical circumstance where it's also simply the fact that there's not as much of a Jewish influence too in most Latin American countries that doesn't like the United States, which has prevented like the emergence of the civil rights revolution, which was a form of political and biological warfare against the white European founding stock of the United States. And that has been given Latin America some breathing room for its white populations, because, yeah, but there's several problems though with Latin America in how racial mixing was an official, if not a de facto, state policy in a lot of those countries. And that's why they've remained stagnant, because you just have a mongrelized population, and as a result, you're just going to have more corruption, low IQ, and the other predictable effects of just racial mixing your population writ large. But yeah, that there's still a degree of colorism, and a lot of it's just the fact that you don't have the pervasive Judeo-leftist memes permeating in those societies, owing to the fact that there's just not as much Jewish influence in those countries. But that's kind of changing now, though, especially, unfortunately, with Javier Milei's Argentina, and that could be a unfortunate model that could be exported region-wide.
Well, I think that you've seen after Nostra Aetate, the 60th anniversary, which was just recently, you know, that basically defanged the church in terms of dealing with the Jews, and it's been a disaster. I mean, it's just been, you know, there's lots of things I disagree with Dr. E. Michael Johns about, but in this, he's completely correct. And until you understand that, like, the Jews are the problem, politically speaking, right? There's not a major issue. The war in Ukraine is a Jewish issue. The wars in the Middle East, six of them or seven of them at my last count, are a Jewish issue. Mass immigration in the United States is caused by Jews. Pornography is caused by Jews. Abortion is caused by Jews. You know, inflation is caused by Jews. Like, I don't know what else to tell you, except unless you deal with the synagogue, you're just not dealing with reality. And
yes,
similarly in the religious realm, like, until you deal with the fact that, like, no, the old covenant is bupkis. It's useless. It doesn't mean anything. It's broken. Like, they had the chance. The blessed apostles and the blessed mother and Saint Joseph, they were Jews, and then they became Christians. You know, like, they were faithful Israelites, and they became Christians. The Jews are the descendants of the Pharisees who rejected Christ. They have nothing to do with, you know, the temple sacrifice and the Holy of Holies, and that's all in a Catholic church in the tabernacle. And the closest thing you'll see to the old temple sacrifice is the old Mass, either at, you know, the traditional Latin Mass or at an Eastern liturgy. Like, you're not dealing with people that oh, like, we just have, like, no, they're not. We have, like, a slight disagreement about how to do the Mass. Like, no, this Jews are your enemy religiously as well, because their very identity comes from a rejection of Christ. Like, to be a Jew, you can be a Jewish Buddhist, you can be a Jewish pagan, you can be a Jewish atheist, you can be a Jewish Hindu, you can be a Jewish anything but a Jewish Christian in Israel, right? And they're Caspars, the Masons, and the Jews, they're irredeemably hostile to a genuine Catholic faith, because that requires them to be, like, told that they're wrong, and that they have to convert, and that they can't be subversive, and that they can't destroy societies, and that they can't deal drugs, and that they can't, you know, pimp women, and they can't steal, and they can't, you know, undermine societies. And that's what they do everywhere they go. I mean, look at Ben Shapiro, for goodness sakes. Like, you have no right to live in your hometown.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Ben, I realize that, you know, you grew up in Los Angeles and you moved to Florida, then you moved to Tennessee or whatever, because you don't care. But he's just an overseas Israeli. Ben Shapiro is not an American. He's never been an American. He's never been interested in being an American. He doesn't care about Americans. He's hostile to Americans. And he's hostile to Americans on racial grounds and religious grounds. Same with Mark Levin. And anybody that wants to pretend that there's such thing as these people operating in good faith or wanting to get along with them or, you know, compromise with them somehow. Like, that's just not possible. You know, if you told the mestizo populations of the United States and Canada, wherever, If you told the invaders, you got to go home, a lot of them would be upset. They'd be mad, but they would take their, you know, PlayStation and their money, and they go home, and they'd be like, okay, well, I guess I'm home now. This isn't so bad. The Jew, like, depends on, like, requires a host. The Jew is a parasite. Right? And until you deal with that fact, you're just not, you're not going to solve any religious problems.
Yes. That's the common denominator in most of the problems we see, whether the over-financialized economy, the mass migration, social degeneracy, the secularization, or just the outright subversion of many time-honored European religions. It's goes back to the Pan-Judah, and if you're not able to confront that head-on, you're basically engaged in a Sisyphean struggle that will eventually wear yourself out, and it will turn out to be a complete fool's errand in the long term. And that's one of the reasons why this battle requires us to really up our game, where you have to know, you gotta hit all the checkboxes, from understanding the racial issue, the religious issues, the Jewish influence issues, and other key facets, because the problems we face, they're deep, and they do require us to maintain like the type of intellectual rigor and discipline to be able to confront it head on and in a correct manner, because there's clearly an issue of our societies, and previous leaders and other fighters have failed in certain regards, and we have to like read up on that history to learn about like the positives and also about the mistakes made, so that we don't end up repeating them, because I think at some point eventually the mistakes we make may actually turn out to be quite deadly.
Absolutely. I mean, 100%. And that's why, you know, again, you know, dear listeners, if you have a spare couple bucks, you know, throw Jose some bucks on his Substack and read it, because it, you know, all the problems you see in Latin America, the syncretism, the ethnic conflicts, the instability, the lack of democracy, everything. Like, that's all coming here because Latin America is coming here. It's here. It's here. You know, there's 50 million illegal Mexicans here, or 50 million illegal immigrants from all over Latin America, at least. Never mind the African population, the you know, the African immigrants and the indigenous African population in the United States. Like, all of these conflicts are coming here. They're here already. They're not going to get better. And if your church is sitting here, well, we just need to give everyone to the Latin Mass. Like, mestizos had the Latin Mass and they became Protestants. They did not hang on to the Mass. White people in Mexico, white people in Brazil, white people in Argentina hung on to the Mass. The mestizo populations of those places just was like, okay, we'll just go along because they're not really capable of thinking on a high level as a group. Exceptions obviously exist. But, and that's not, I don't want people to make, like, think I'm insulting people who are trying to be, like, that's just a statement of facts. It's like saying water is wet and fire burns. And until you deal with those realities, and I've learned a lot from our guest here, Jose Nino. So, Jose, would you tell people to find you one more time before we close out?
Yes, where I'm most active is on X/Twitter at Jose Al Nino. That's where you can get my takes on politics and just some of my latest musings. And then for my written content, that's going to be Jose Nino Unfiltered at Substack.com. And that is josealnino.org. You can just go there and it'll take you to my Substack. That's where you can also find my podcast, El Nino Speaks, which is on iTunes, YouTube, Odyssey, and Rumble as well. And I also write at the Occidental Observer pretty consistently and the Libertarian Institute. And you can get my perspectives on Jewish influence at the Occidental Observer and geopolitics at Libertarian Institute.
And I would strongly recommend following Jose wherever you can. I learn stuff all the time, and I'm privileged and pleasure to call him my friend as well as my colleague. And I want to say thank you so much, Jose, for being here. And with that, I'm Jerome, signing off of The Fundamental Principle.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.